Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. You know, I cannot believe that I have not chatted with you, and I don't even know. I mean, our paths cross through the live event space and everything, but I finally get to sit down with the one and only Dr. Jessica Volgesang in the house. How are you, my friend?
I am amazing. How are you?
I'm better now. Like, finally, I say to my friends too, I say, we got to take time just to hang out and check in like this, right?
I know. There's a veterinarian who lives in San Diego, and the only time I see her is at conferences in other states. It makes me so sad.
But if you see her, do you actually tell her, like, stop, we got to take 20 minutes or a half hour to, like, you know, have coffee or something? Do you get to see her when you see her there?
It depends on the show. We try, but then every single time we say, we got to get together at home, and then we don't.
No. And it's one of those things, like, I'll catch you, I'll see you in a little bit when you're at these conferences, right? And you realize you're on a plane ride home.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I see you at least 17 times at every show. Yes. But it's always like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's like the intro to Friends. I'll be there for you. And then the hands. And then we just leave. And then that's it. And I'm like, no, we need to, like, sit down and chat. So I want to know, and our listeners want to know, like, what you've been up to. So a little bit of background on our wonderful colleague, Dr. Jessica Volgesang. She is an international speaker, best-selling author of All Dogs Go to Kevin. I love that book. And chief medical officer at AHA. As a founder of Paucurious Media back in 2009, she was one of the first veterinarians to explore how the internet was going to impact the profession and build community. In that time, she reached hundreds of thousands of pet parents around the world, helped launch multiple veterinary brands, and created the veterinary telemedicine community in response to COVID-19. And in addition to her work at AHA, she currently sits on the boards for the Mark Morris Institute and the Veterinary Virtual Care Association. So you do a lot of great work. I got to tell you, and you probably don't know this, and I don't think I've ever told you this, by the way. I was just reading your bio there. You have inspired me so much. You and Danielle Lambert, when you gave a talk for, was it the Hill Symposium or?
The Global Symposium
in Toronto, Canada. I sat in the audience and I was wowed by your talk about social media when it was just becoming a thing, you know, like veterinarians. And I was like writing feverishly. And I want to thank you, by the way, because it really opened up my eyes, because look what I'm doing now. You know,
amazing. So. You're like one of the biggest influencers in the world. Well done.
I love what I do, but I've tapped in and leaned into your lectures and your words, and it really meant a lot. It resonated with me. So thank you for that.
Oh no, thank you. And you know, I think it was such an interesting lesson for me. I was talking with someone today about TikTok, and I said, you know, when I started writing, so this was in 2009 that I started my blog, and everybody kind of look down their nose, like, oh, you're just kind of messing around on social media. That's not serious, right? You're not doing serious veterinarian work. And yet, when you look at the impact you can have, I think people get it now, but I still kind of laugh when I see folks kind of rolling their eyes at the same thing, thinking that veterinarians who are on TikTok or doing other things, communicating about the work we do, are wasting their time or not being serious. This is serious stuff. Yes. It has a huge impact on pet owners. And I think, you know, the conversation is less about whether you should, about how you should do it responsibly.
Right. Yes. Well said. Absolutely. And that's a big part of my platform is, you know, educating properly, not being the Dr. Google, being a trusted source of, you know, of education. And with my CTAs or call to actions is always like, go talk to your veterinarian, like have that conversation. And I think it's so good. And speaking of the social media, you really took virtual care by storm. You really created impact. You've lectured around the country and the world, for that matter, in that. What got you so involved in that space? Because I think it's fantastic.
So actually, it was sort of this weird interplay between the work I had done on social media, and at the time, right before COVID, I was working for an in-home hospice and euthanasia practice. So I was doing that at the same time that my own mother was going through hospice, and I was trying to look at these analogies, thinking, gosh, these pet owners need support 24/7, just like we do with people, and we haven't quite figured out how to do that. So how do we do a better job leveraging these platforms? And I think that's still a conversation that veterinary medicine struggles with, is that I think people are so focused on this idea of, we don't want technology to take over the importance of the work that we do, instead of looking at it as a tool and a way to be there for people in a way that doesn't, ruin your boundaries, or we're not asking people to be on call all the time, but how do you trust other people who can help out? And so that was sort of the impetus for all of that, and the telemedicine group led to joining the Veterinary Virtual Care Association. So it's still something I feel super passionately about, because like when you go on TikTok, that's telehealth. It's providing advice and all of those things that impact how pet owners take care of their pets is part of that umbrella. And that's what I think people miss, because we're so hyper-focused on, well, you can't diagnose bloat and treat it over telemedicine, therefore telemedicine stinks. That's not how it works. Don't do that.
No, it doesn't. And I remember, I think you said this during one of your lectures during COVID, because we had the virtual conferences. And you said, you guys, how many of you answer a DM on social media? Well, guess what? You're doing telemedicine.
Yeah, they're all the time,
Right.
we do it. And so it's less about whether you should, because we are, and more about what are the right use cases, what are the wrong use cases, and how do you do things in a way that, at the end of the day, use the tools at your disposal to improve outcomes.
Right.
That's it.
Yes. And we're talking a lot in this year and heading into 2025 about spectrum of care, access to care. And I think what you're talking about with virtual care is right in there, when we're talking about spectrum of care. I mean, I was just talking to a woman online last night, and she says the nearest veterinarian is 4 hours away. 4 hours. And it's because she's in a rural area in Oklahoma. And so she does everything she can with virtual care and access. Talk to us a little bit about what that looks like from your lens with virtual care and access to care. And we're going to chat a little bit about spectrum of care too.
Yeah, I think that's the really critical part of the conversation, is you have to take everything in context. So I live in San Diego. There's a veterinarian within like half a block of pretty much everyone here. And so you're not going to be doing all of that much necessarily. Like, it's easy to tell someone to come in, but what do you do if they can't? And so one barrier is distance. Another barrier is just simply transportation. There's all sorts of different reasons. And so for me, the conversation, you really can't even engage in the conversation unless you take a step back and look at the idea of family-centered practice. Like, this isn't really about you and what you want the person to do. It's about the family and what they're capable of. And so if you look at yourself less as the person who's dictating things and more as the guide, again, looking in the framework of a story, how do you guide that person knowing where they are in order to get to what they need? And part of that's going to involve you, but not necessarily all of it. And so virtual care is a tool in that. Triage is probably the number one application when you talk about telehealth. We're not talking about diagnosing and treating, but just making sure that that person who's 4 hours away understands this is more important than you think. You should get in the car and start driving, versus this is, you can wait and see, and here's XYZ is what you need to look for. So all of that feeds in to this bigger global concept.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost as if it's a greater conversation than not just about pumping out veterinarians and veterinary technicians out of vet school. It's like being strategic and hyper-focused on where the wants and needs of those clients are, going to where they are. And I do think virtual care is like one of those opportunities to help. Again, to your point, not to diagnose like bloat like over the phone or through a virtual care, but at least help guide them along the way a little bit. Yeah, I think that's huge. A fun fact, Jessica, I don't know if you know this. I do TikTok lives every night for 4 years. I rarely miss a
Every
night. So I'm either on for like 20 minutes to like 45 minutes on the weekends, maybe an hour, just depending on like where the conversation goes. And we'll get somewhere between like 5 to 10,000 pet owners that come through. And I share that with you because it gives them such peace of mind over some such simple things. The question, we're not diagnosing, but about whether or not they should be seen and where to go is really the two big questions. I always like, my dog's got diarrhea, there's some blood coming out, I'm concerned. And other pet owners will chime in the chat, like, what state do you live in? Oh, I have a veterinarian right near you. Here's the contact information. I'll DM you. I'm like, yes, this is amazing. That's next level providing access to care. Not even just me, the veterinarian, I'm just driving this conversation. And there's other pet owners that chime in and try to help out to find out where they're located to find a vet. Because I believe it or not many pet owners have a vet that they go to.
They don't even know where to start. And it's so cool that that conversation is happening in your sphere, right? And not out on Facebook in a random group, because you're there and you're helping to guide the conversation. And so one of the things that that I did before joining AHA, I spent some time advising Whisker Docs, which was an online, or it is an online teletriage service. And they've got some incredible data about, the biggest problem that people have isn't the idea that they understand they need to go to the vet, but to your point, they don't know when or how urgent it is. And half the people underestimate how urgent it is, and half the people overestimate. And we saw this really writ large during COVID, right? When the emergency rooms were just flooded, and they were flooded with ears and rears. And because of that, you had maybe a hit by car out in the parking lot who was, not being seen as quickly because they were just so flooded. And so why, but it's such a shame that we weren't able to leverage that a little more ahead of time to help these places be prepared. And, they got there eventually. But remember when was it the University of Minnesota, their teaching hospital had to shut down? Like, we just awful.
Hammered.
That's a terrible situation. That's terrible for the pet parents, and it's awful for the people who work there, because their hearts were breaking.
Nuts. So I know you work at AHA, which is awesome. Big shout out to them for creating such great standards. And to the listeners, I want you to share with them something new that you've been working on called community care guidelines.
Yes. So I'm super excited about this. And so AHA for decades has put out guidelines for the profession. So we have management of allergic disease, we have some oncology guidelines coming out. But one thing that has never been done anywhere is essentially an access to care guideline. And so when our guidelines come out, they talk about what we call best practices, and some people look at that as the gold standard. And what that misses, and this is something everyone struggles with, is how to take a spectrum of care or an incremental care approach when you have someone come in. And so I can tell you what you should do, right? XYZ. And much of the time, someone's like, well, I can't quite do all of that. What next? And so we all do this every day. You have to start to prioritize things to help these people. But we were trying to figure out, how do we do a better job giving people guidance in that prioritization so they don't quite feel so on their own? So that's one part of it, is helping the individuals. And then the other part of it is giving people some tips for how to look at what we do as being part of a network. And so you've got shelters out there who are oftentimes now primary care providers for a variety of reasons. And so how do you reach out, help each other out, and figure out what they do and how you can partner with them? So we're really excited about starting the conversation. Big problems require big solutions. I think one of the biggest struggles for me in practice, and I did ER for a while, is that it always felt like the burden of figuring out the solution was on that one person in the exam room. No one's talked to them at that point about what the cost is going to look like. No one's helped them understand what they might need to do in order to afford it. And so that burden weighs on you because it's every day. So how do we do a better job as an industry supporting the individuals in the room so that you don't feel like you have to solve all this by yourself because you can't.
Yeah. And it takes away some of the stress from us, the veterinary
So
professionals,
much.
right?
So much stress.
Years ago, I would be like, in my mind, I'd be like, okay, let me spin the wheel of diagnostics and see where it's going to land with the owner and see what we can do. Is it going to be imaging or is it going to be lab work? But now when we
Yeah.
talk about working together collaboratively, I just think that's fantastic. And the owner doesn't feel guilty. That's huge too.
Yeah, I know. It seems like we're starting to get away from saying if you can't afford the vet, don't get the pet.
Yeah.
I hope we continue to move in that direction because it's, I understand the sentiment, but it's not constructive. When you're in the room and the pet's right there, well, I guess you shouldn't have gotten a pet. It
Right.
doesn't, that's not who we are, and that's not how we talk to people, right? Because we want to help. And so that's not going to work unless we're a little more proactive in having these infrastructures in ahead of time.
Right. That's awesome. Well, thank you for doing that. And where would that be? It's going to be available soon, I understand.
Yes. So
Yeah.
they are going to be published officially on November 1st, and they will be available online at aha.org on October 29th.
Okay, great. So by the time this is airing, it's going to be available, everyone. So that's awesome. So we'll put it in the show notes too, so that way you'll know where to get access for it. I'm curious too, Jessica, because I really have no idea. How many AHA accredited hospitals are there in the United States, roughly? Do you know?
About 4,500.
Wow,
Yep.
4,500.
So 15% of hospitals or thereabouts in North America are accredited. So
Okay.
we're really proud of that number. We'd love for it to be more. So yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And I talk about it too to pet owners because some are curious about what it's. They'll see the logo maybe when they walk into the vet hospital. They might see it on the website. But it's a big deal to the listeners out there because I know we have pet owners that tune in. It's a huge deal that a hospital is AHA accredited. So I always give them much respect and mad props for that because it's very nice. So.
Yeah, the hospitals have to go through it's about 900 standards in order to become accredited. And I think, from a pet owner perspective, it's nice because what that means is, anybody can tell you I'm great at what I do. This is external validation
Yes.
from an organization that's come in and verified. These are what we know to be best practices, and you're doing it. You walk the walk and talk the talk about patient care and pain control and communication and record keeping and all that good stuff. So it really is a badge of honor for people and most importantly for pet owners, a sign of trust
Yeah,
and commitment.
absolutely. Okay, so I have a few fun questions to ask you, my friend, since I don't get a chance to hang out with you. So, okay, so we're almost done with 2024. Can you believe this?
No, I don't
What
like
in the world?
that.
I know. So, what was the highlight of 2024? Did you have something with a personal, professional, something fun that was cool this year that you could think of?
So, the big it's like a highlight and a low light at the same time.
Yeah.
My youngest today is actually the first day of college for him.
Oh.
Yes. And so that was a personal highlight for me. And I think particularly when I look back on my career, when my kids were little, it was so hard to commit to full-time work. And so now that I'm back and I'm doing things full-time, it's so nice to be able to tell other parents, it's okay. Like you can prioritize different things at different places in your career. And then come back when you're ready. And so
Right.
that's been a highlight for me. Oh,
Well,
can I do two highlights?
yes.
Okay. The second highlight, I get to speak at the Moms of the DVM conference about AHA's retention study. So we did this big study about how to keep people in the profession. And so I gave the talk, but I decided I was going to do it with a Barbie theme. Yeah.
Stop it right now.
So I did a talk called Building Your Barbie Dream House.
Yes.
And I mean, I really just wanted an excuse to use lots of memes in pink. So
Right, right.
that was my professional highlight.
I love it. I'm just Ken.
Yes, that was in there. We had clips. It was so much fun.
Okay, wait. So I was going to ask you, and I forget, did it come out this year? What was your favorite movie or show of 2024? I don't think Barbie came out this year, right? It was last year.
No, that one was last year.
Okay.
So currently, Chaos. You've seen it with Jeff Goldblum?
Yes.
About a really petulant, temperamental Zeus. So much fun.
Oh, it's really good.
Okay. And Great British Bake Show.
Oh, you know it.
I can't wait.
I like that one, and then I'll watch Nailed It and Failed It. You ever see that?
Love that show. I have never laughed so hard. It was an episode where they had to do sculpted cakes of faces.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So good. Yes. Okay, so do you have a favorite celebrity crush or somebody that you would just love to see, music group or somebody in the entertainment industry that you're just really diehard over?
So, well, it's not possible anymore, but my celebrity crush for a long time was Anthony Bourdain. Yes.
Good one.
So I actually, fun fact, when I recorded the audiobook for All Dogs Go to Kevin, I love the way he speaks in his inflections and cadence. And so I actually was doing an Anthony Bourdain impression while I was reading the audiobook.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I mean, not like trying to sound exactly, but you know, the way does the up and down. And
Yes. I love it. A couple more questions. Who really inspired you to become a veterinarian? Was there a particular mentor in your career? I know that mentors change, of course. Was there someone that really stood out to you that's like, wow, they really made an impact on my career?
You know, I wouldn't say that there was a specific mentor. It was interesting. It's sort of an anti-mentor, I guess, because I was pre-med in undergrad. And so my anti-mentors were the MDs who were like, don't do it. It's a terrible profession to get into. Managed care is going to ruin everything. And so I would say, and this had to have been 98. So whatever students were at the University of Minnesota in the summer of 1998, y'all inspired me because I was doing a summer internship in biomedical engineering and it was mind numbing. I was looking under a microscope, counting cells all day.
Yes.
But I saw the vet students walking by. They were doing some sort of valve replacement thing, and I kind of followed them and watched what they were doing. And I said,
"Wow,
that's what I want to do."
That's so
cool. I don't know their names, but yeah, they inspired me.
Yeah. All it takes is a moment. What I always say. That's why I'm really big on inspiring kids about vet med and all that fun stuff too. Okay, as we sign off, what would be a great piece of advice you would share with our colleagues listening in? Sometimes days can be tough. You know, there could be challenges that lie ahead. What would be a good piece of advice you would give them?
I would say find the people who lift you up and don't let them go, but also don't forget to be that person who lifts other people up. You never know what impact you're having on people. And so if you see something that you think is awesome, don't be afraid to just say it out loud because you have no idea how much they might have needed it that day.
So true. It really is. You just don't know what people are going through anymore, you know? So it's nice to just say something positive, uplifting to your point like that. And I feel like in our profession, we're so humble with what we do. And it's nice to just say, hey, great job today. Or, you know, you matter. So I love that. That's great.
You matter, Adam.
Yes, you matter too. And I swear next time I see you, we're actually going to sit down and have a Starbucks strawberry acai together.
That sounds good. I like that.
Yay. Well, Jessica Vogelsang, where can we learn more about you and our friends at AHA?
So AHA.org, AAHA.org is our brand spanking shiny new website homepage. So yeah, go check it out. Check out the guidelines. We love them.
I was going to say, it's beautiful, by the way. The website's really nice.
Yeah. We have a wonderful director, Wendy, who just spent the last few months doing a refresh to make it feel inviting.
Yeah, it really is. And to pet owners that tune in, there's pet owner resources out there too that you could check out on their website too. So awesome. Jessica, always good to hear from you. And we're going to see each other more, I swear.
Okay, that sounds good.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to do other great work out here. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.